This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, folks, the foot of Canal Street, the foot of Poydras and all points in between been re-engineered, redesigned, and has turned into something that I don't think anybody ever really thought would be accomplished. But it has, and it comes to a conclusion for the most part today with the grand opening of Caesars. And joining us is Samir Sami Mowat. He is the Senior VP and General Manager at the Caesars facility. He joins us. Sami, welcome to the show.
What's up, Newell? Thank you for having us. Excited for today and just getting everything ready for our big grand opening celebration tonight.
So, Sami, is it safe to say that at that location, Harrah's ain't there no more?
It is safe to say that. I think it was around Memorial Day weekend when we were able to make the statement that everything that was Harrah's New Orleans was either renovated or behind a construction wall. But as you know from your last visit here, those construction walls were large and everywhere, and but now we're excited. Octavia is open, Nobu is open, our lobby is open, our valet is open, and we're going to host our board of directors here this week to commemorate such a special event for Caesars Entertainment, and then we will from there open up the hotel to all of the Swifties this weekend. We still have a little bit of work to do in the hotel, but we will have 250 of our 340 rooms online for the big weekend.
Absolutely. I know tonight you have an event. It starts, what, at 6? It's open to the public, if my memory serves me correct. What can they expect?
Yeah, from 6 to 6:30, we're going to have a little bit of a ceremony outside on the stairs at Canal Street, and we're going to have some of our company leadership along with a couple local dignitaries just sort of commemorate the event. And then really it's going to be short and sweet and appropriate. But as we become Caesars New Orleans, and if you think about everything Harrah's New Orleans always stood for and Caesars New Orleans is now going to stand for, we're going to quickly transition to a big celebration and a big party in Octavia. That there'll be a private part to that and then a public part to that, and we're excited. Anybody that wants to come down and check it out, and then like I said, it really kicks off what is not only a great weekend for us, but it's going to kick off what is an incredible fall into winter. And I think everybody's already pointing to Super Bowl, right? I'll say it out loud.
Absolutely.
It's something we're thinking about all the time. So,
I actually have it on my calendar and plan to be there this evening. I've been fortunate enough to spend some time with you with the opening of the sports book and the opening of Octavia and Nobu and so many other different occasions. I can't wait to see the front entrance. I know we've been talking about that for a long period of time. Yep. And y'all have had to accommodate folks with traffic flow and stuff, and now the final footprint comes to fruition.
No question, and even you weren't here just that long ago, Newell, but I would tell you that opening up that front entrance, getting the windows open, getting valet open, it really was the last piece that makes the place feel cohesively done. And while, in the corners and the edges, we have a few things going on still, it feels like Caesars New Orleans now. And the reaction from both our employees, our team members, and guests alike, visitors that come in from other parts of our company, they all say it feels like we are Caesars. Another compliment we hear on the regular is it feels like Vegas. And, you know, that's one where it's important to us that it feels like Vegas and New Orleans. And so while you'll see the Caesar statue and you'll see Nobu, you'll also see the fleur-de-lis on the back of every chair. You'll see Emerald's Brasserie. You'll see Nina's Nina Compton's restaurant. And so we're excited to be the New Orleans version of that, which is, I can't think of anything better, quite honestly.
Well, if it feels like Caesar's, then it's safe to say that what goes on at Caesar's stay at Caesar's then, right?
Well, the foot of canal and pointers, nobody wants to talk too much about that anyway, Newell, so we're good.
I know this has been a long and kind of arduous thing for you. I mean, personally, you and your staff, what are y'all feeling?
You know, look, I think the team is feeling a sense of pride. I would say there's a little bit of relief. It's been a long 3 years working through construction and being open the entire time and trying to be the great service providers that we've been known as while dealing with some of the disruption. And, you know, for me personally, it's about the team, because at the end of the day, I would tell you that when I meet with my team, the folks that have really made a go, when I meet with our frontline employees and we talk about either what got us here or where we're at now, I would tell you that I'm proud to often be the dumbest guy in the room. They make me look very good, and they are the ones who have really made everything go. And the fun thing about tonight even is I would tell you the current version of Caesars Entertainment very much believes in promotion from within. So not only will we have all of our local team members here, there's a lot of folks who have been instrumental in the success of this over the last 3 years that are now at other properties in our company, and a fair number of them will be back tonight. And for me, it's just a privilege to get to honor them and to thank them for all of their efforts. And and then after that, Newell, like, we're ready to be done with all this and do what we do best, which is drive business and make a little bit of money.
Absolutely. And this is for the benefit of Tommy Tucker, because we have this Catholic school rivalry going on, that the leadership at Caesars are two Blue Jays and a Sally. And I just don't see the Shaw Eagle representation there yet. But
rivalries are where both sides have success. So Jesuit doesn't have many rivals, you know.
Boy, you just set off a whole host.
I'm not really that guy, but I can't help myself.
Yeah, no, you just set off a whole host of my friends. I'm going to tell you what. But let me just say, Sammy, congratulations. Thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations to you, your team, the transformation. Y'all always, you guys, y'all really have an interesting perspective, because I've heard you speak publicly about the redevelopment of that area of the city, and you're never shy about mentioning others and what they're doing, and how much it creates that synergy down there, where the tide rises for everyone. And it's really the sign of a good, credible leader. And I mean that with true sincerity. It takes everybody to succeed for the city to succeed, right?
There's no question, Newell. Like, I appreciate you calling it out. At the end of the day, the idea that Caesars New Orleans is going to see the success that we want it to see, the idea that we would do that on an island versus the way the city wins is, it's that cliche, the rising tide floats all boats. And while, of course, we want to be one of the bigger boats on that water, the success of the city, working with not only the businesses around here, but with New Orleans and Company, with city government, with all of the people that support us and make this a great place to be, that's how we win. And like, you know, you said it, I say it enough as well. I'm a guy who was fortunate enough to get raised in the Caesars empire and then come home and have the privilege to assume this job. And so the fact that I'm able to help the city while I'm doing my part that I'm supposed to do for my company, it's a privilege and an honor, and we just appreciate your support and the fact that you would recognize us today.
Thank you so much for joining us, Sammy. I hope to see you at 6 o'clock on the steps there. Samir Sammy Mowad, Senior VP and General Manager at Caesars. Have a great evening.
Drinks tonight on me, Newell.
There you go.
See you later.
All righty, man. We will be right back. 504-260-1870. Coleman's in the booth saying, I'm coming.
He got me at free drinks.
he said you got him at free drinks, Sammy. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Stay with us. The biggest concert event in the world is coming to the city of New Orleans, not for one night, not for two nights, but three nights, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We're one of just about a dozen or so cities that host Taylor Swift for a three-night event, which means a lot of moving parts, a lot of things need to come together, and a lot of challenges. Here to talk to us about some of that is James DeMeo, event security expert. James, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the conversation.
James, I got to imagine, you know, you're an expert in this. You don't see many events quite like this. In fact, I was thinking in my adult years, I just simply don't remember one.
Yeah, this is real exciting, obviously, for the city of New Orleans. They will definitely be ready based on their previous experiences, obviously, with Mardi Gras and the Super Bowl. But, you know, looking at this holistically from a security standpoint, the need to obviously get out in front of any potential challenges is paramount, you know, based on the multitude of security and cyber-related threats that exist within sports security.
Yeah, I mean, the nature of providing security for just about anything, a small event, medium-sized, large event, has changed. And in light of the most recent political events at some of the Trump rallies, even more so, right?
We look at, obviously, geopolitical divisiveness, domestic and internationally, but just being cognizant of, as you've mentioned, the political climate is key for those entrusted with duty of care for safeguarding these types of events. So obviously the world is watching, but it's paramount that obviously the city of New Orleans and Homeland Security, Joint Terrorism Task Force, all those folks are having timely conversations right now as we speak in preparation for Friday evening.
We had the occasion of having Chief Ann Kirkpatrick on earlier in the show this morning. We talked about the Taylor Swift security plan and bringing together not only the members of the NOPD, but a lot of different other law enforcement agencies that have jurisdiction within the confines of the city of New Orleans and throughout the surrounding area, number of task forces coming in. The more she talked about it, the more I felt at ease that they're on top of this. I knew they would be because they're used to doing these kind of events. And that plays a big, big part when you talk about familiarity, in dealing with other agencies as they come in to assist.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And we look at, obviously, Taylor Swift, the terror incident that was thwarted in Vienna, Austria in August. So obviously the international, that was a win for the international security and intelligence community. So learning our lessons from Austria, obviously her successes in Miami Gardens and moving forward, sharing that information, you know, with the individuals, as I've mentioned, that are safeguarding the event, the events Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, is paramount for, again, protecting large groups of people in densely populated areas. We're looking at the demographics of the patrons that will be coming out Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So we're looking at teenagers and parents. So we have to be mindful of the type of crowds that come and obviously information sharing that exists between the governmental stakeholders overseeing this event.
James, have you had an occasion to talk to folks in the aftermath of a Taylor Swift concert as to what their experience was?
Well, based on my consulting and certainly my work with Tulane University and higher ed, you know, we look at the sharing of best practices and after action. So there are previous incidents that we learn our lessons from, unfortunately. So whether that's obviously Travis Scott with Astroworld or, you know, obviously the Manchester Arena, the IED bomber at the Ariana Grande concert, obviously the Vegas shooting, which is the Black Swan incident and aerial assault. So these are all types of challenges that we learn from. And as long as we share our information in a timely manner, we utilize technologies within the space, and that's, you know, examples being biometrics and iris scans and license plate reader technologies and responsible social media monitoring by law enforcement. These, along with physical security measures, really bolster the space.
Yeah, it's interesting the role that technology plays in making sure that you leverage that to your advantage as much as possible.
Yes, I agree. And certainly an educated patron or a fan is a smart one. So, you know, credit to the city of New Orleans. They're through public service announcements, they're getting the information out ahead of schedule, meaning codes of conduct, meaning public service announcements. And obviously the fans can do their part by, you know, say something, their own situational awareness, letting somebody know within the space if something doesn't feel right, doesn't sense right, to let somebody know in the interest of public safety that it doesn't feel right to them.
It probably doesn't hurt either that the city and all of these agencies are communicating, working together in preparation for the Super Bowl, because that creates a more recent familiarity with one another. And I always said that makes things a whole lot easier.
It certainly does. And certainly, you know, what you do in practice is what you'll do. I spent 21 years in law enforcement, you know, on Long Island with the Nassau County Police Department prior to, you know, transitioning into sports security. And my experience, you know, working venues is information sharing. It's certainly practice. And obviously their actions have to be reasonable and necessary. But, you know, with the experience from this Mardi Gras and the Super Bowl, they'll be ready. They have the resources. They have the technologies in place. And as I mentioned, it's up to the fans to really let someone in a position of authority know that something is not right. Again, the mantras of see something, say something are so important with these types of mega events.
And there's also, and Chief Kirkpatrick mentioned this earlier about personal responsibility, you know, to be aware of your surroundings and to not just show up, but to show up and pay attention.
Pay attention to the world around you. Again, it's called personal situational awareness, fully charged cell phones, knowing where you've parked your vehicle. Obviously, traveling in groups, there's always strength in numbers. And knowing how you got in the venue and obviously how you'll get out, obviously, if there's some type of true emergency situation. But to get out in front of that, to understand exactly what your pre-planning response is and to work with, obviously, the first responders in the space is key for making it a safe and enjoyable event.
It's always amazing to me, you know, going to football games, it doesn't matter what arena you go to. I always make a habit of trying to figure out where my seats are and where is the best entry level into the facility. How many people don't do that? They just show up and they're like wandering around looking for somebody to explain where they should go. I never thought that was a good plan. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you want to operate from a position of strength, you don't want to follow the frenzy, fearful crowd because they don't have a plan in place. So to obviously, you know, look at security and your own personal safety from, you know, a knowledge-based empowerment, you know, model is definitely key to getting out in front of these types of challenges.
And James, separate and apart from going to an event, these are always sound practices just going to and from your home, right? Or to and from the grocery store or the mall or wherever.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the world, you know, we're living in this age of disruption, both domestically and internationally, but understanding, as they've mentioned, whether it's special events, places of worship, you know, obviously corporate centers, knowing, you know, again, your situational awareness is key. Fully charged cell phones, you know, obviously living in New Orleans, you deal with a lot of the severe and inclement weather. So that's another type of scenario that could take place, you know, this upcoming weekend. But knowing how to deal with these types of challenges, again, helps the individual and families operate from a position of strength.
James, recently there was a report that was issued as it relates to the Butler rally. And it seems to me, as I kind of was perusing through some of the report, that a lot of agencies that are charged with a lot of responsibilities, there seem to be a level of complacency that is set in. I guess when you go for many, many years without a challenge, and as you point out, not really remembering some of the stuff in the near past and some of the stuff that's gone on overseas, complacency is, you know, something that can really erode confidence in an organization and confidence in their planning and the like. And typically, I think, has led in many occasions to really ugly outcomes. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we look at safeguarding events, you know, it is sports security has become a highly specialized niche in today's, you know, multi-billion-dollar juggernaut sports and entertainment industry. So looking at safeguarding events, we don't want to be complacent. You know, lessons learned, sharing of best practices, practice, you know, red teams, computer simulations, tabletops. These are all the things that the folks are doing inside stadiums, venues, and arenas, or at least they should be doing proactively, and that would include, you know, conducting risk assessments on exterior perimeters, again, that tend to present as softer targets. So you can imagine the clear bag policy Friday night, the patrons are going in, but those spaces just outside the ingress are concerning because they are prime targets for terrorist strikes. So complacency will not suffice during major disruption, and certainly, you know, practicing and sharing, you know, best practices and lessons learned is paramount for, you know, again, the key governmental stakeholders overseeing these spaces.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, and if you view the event, the world, your home as a series of concentric circles, and the more as you move out and there's more enhancement of security there, that makes the next concentric circle the vulnerable spot, right? So there's always got to be an eye on it.
It does, and you're absolutely right. So if you look at the Superdome, you talk about concentric circles of security. You know, it's the technologies from inside the command center. That would include access control and CC television and biometrics, as I mentioned, to the middle circle, if you will, and that's the ingress, the clear bag policy as the fans are entering the venue. And then we look at the outer perimeter, which, again, we look at, you know, potential for, you know, obviously, the vehicles as weapons, because the Superdome is located in an urban center, so we have to be mindful that a bad actor could use a weapon nefariously to run into crowds. So those are, again, those exterior perimeters outside, you know, we mentioned the concentric circles, but on the outer side that flow into, you know, the French Quarter and obviously those business improvement districts that tend to be vulnerable, and we have to be cognizant from a sports security standpoint to monitor them proactively.
So, James, I've been asking all my guests, are you a Swiftie?
I am not a Swiftie, but I am. I'm intrigued by the phenomena that surrounds the Taylor Swift effect and how that impacts not only this conversation, but the roles of sport venue risk managers and the roles of, you know, obviously everyone. You know, you mentioned earlier interchangeable parts, but lots of moving parts in looking at, you know, I find it fascinating to see how these parts come together to keep people safe, but also to provide a safe and enjoyable experience.
And what's also amazing to me is the economic impact. We've had a couple of economists on. It's just, it's mind-boggling when you think about it. And that's why I just can't ever remember any. And I may be wrong, and I'm sure if I am, somebody's going to correct me. Any other band having the economic impact that she's having on so many different communities that she's visiting on her tour?
It's tremendous. And you look at hospitality tourism, you look at obviously the average price just to get in the building is well over $1,000. Now, that may lower between now and concert time. But, yeah, it is a tremendous economic boon. But we have to balance the goals of sport marketers with the goals of preventing bad things from happening at stadiums, venues, and arenas. And no venue, whether it's a Superdome or any venue where there is an event of this magnitude, wants to be known as a venue that skimps on security. So there is definitely a nexus between the marketing piece and all the money that will be made from this type of mega event. And, again, you know, reducing those types of risks to prevent any venue for being known as, you know, that venue if something terribly goes wrong.
You know, media response to this sometimes has been kind of spotty, where they don't recognize that Security plans are all about minimizing as much risk as possible. It's really not about elimination of risk, because that doesn't happen. It's just because of the human capital involved and everything else, you have all these moving parts. You're never going to eliminate all risk. It's creating the highest amount of minimization as possible, right?
Well, again, I mean, you're right. And unfortunately, nobody bats 1,000% in the sports security industry, whether that's, you know, the Super Bowl, and obviously fans have gotten on the field the past couple of years. So you can have all the resources in the world, but like you've mentioned, we have to factor in the human element, where security guards and officers may let their guard down momentarily, and now all of a sudden, you know, a fan is on the field, and it becomes a viral moment on social media. So we have to be mindful that, we do the best we can with the resources. We mitigate risk to the greatest degree possible. And we certainly try to create that harmonious balance between, obviously, you know, a safe and enjoyable environment without, you know, obviously being overzealous and creating a police state. So that's really the goal of the events coming up Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but to find that balance, to make sure everyone has a great time and gets home safely.
Absolutely. James DeMeo, thank you so much for joining us, event security expert. Love having you on the show today, and have a great week.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the conversation. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We got a few minutes when we come back. We'd love to go to the talk lines. Give us a shout. We can talk about anything that you desire. We will be right back. This is Newell on WWL. So welcome back. Give us a call, 504-260-1870. I wanted to talk about this situation with this intelligence leak, about the plan allegedly outlined by the IDF and the Israeli government as it relates to their response to Iran. If, in fact, this comes from within the U.S. intelligence community, we will likely not recover from that anytime soon. The level of confidence that our allies will have in us will diminish to a place that we don't even really want to think about. If we cannot be trusted, and if we lack the security systems in place where someone who's ideologically at odds with the position taken by the U.S. government and decides to start leaking these documents, if we're not treating these individuals appropriately, if it is us, and if we find out who it is, and we treat it with anything less than treason, we're going to have a problem. And this continues to present itself in a way that I'm just watching the body language of John Kirby. I'm listening to the words of both the president and the vice president. The president the other day said, we know about the plan, and we know about when it was going to occur. So that tells me that we possessed information. Now, who possessed it? I don't know. But if, in fact, we did, in fact, possess this information and it got out, it's going to be very interesting. This has moved in a couple of different directions thus far. I'm not sure where it's going to end up. I hope that it wasn't us, because we will end up paying the price. No one will have confidence in the sanctity and security of us holding on to top secret information that could potentially put a lot of people's lives at risk. Not really clear how this ended up revealing itself and the motivations behind same, but thankfully it was publicly revealed. Can you imagine what it would be like if it wouldn't have been revealed until maybe after some action taken by the Israelis? And possibly with Iran's ability to thwart whatever action was taken because they possessed top secret information. How tragic would that be? And that's the lens that we actually need to assess this through. As I'm listening to the talking heads of the Biden administration, I just don't feel this sense of urgency and exigency in looking into this matter and getting deep in the weeds with this. I think what's coming to the forefront in everybody's minds in this administration right now is the election. And that's not good. In fact, that's bad. And if we end up revealing that it's us, in the immediate aftermath of the election, you can count on there being an investigation as to who knew what, when, why, and how, and if the timing of the release of that information was calculated for political purposes, it will diminish the confidence of our allies even more. We have midterms, we've got regular cycle elections. Folks are going to be very wary about sharing anything with us during an election season or an election process. Hopefully, it was not us. Because in the end, none of this is good. And I don't know who it might have been. But what was interesting is that one of the things that was revealed was the British government's participation in providing intelligence inside of Iran. And that was kind of an interesting point, too. And then that coupled with the response of the Biden administration, I don't know about you, but my antenna went up immediately. And I think this is going to end up being problematic, but I hope that I'm wrong. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. You know, we've covered a lot of ground today, starting with Chief Kirkpatrick and Arnie Philco, Melinda Herring, and Captain Mikolai Saraga, member of the UCF, Ukraine Cultural Forces Orchestra Band that's playing. In fact, I'm going to head over to the Jewish Community Center at 4 o'clock today to see them play. They'll be there from 4 to 5. At 12 to 1, they'll be on the City Hall Perdido steps. And then again tomorrow from 9 to 10 at the New Orleans Military and Maritime Academy on at 425 O'Bannon Street. From 12 to 1, they'll be at the Cultural Forces Concert at the VA Hospital Atrium. And from 150 to 310, they'll be at the Marsalis Jazz Studio on Charter Street. And they will be at the Milne Community Center tomorrow at 4 p.m. And then they finish out at 7 to 9 p.m. at the new Marini Theater at 2301 Murray Street. You want to get out and see them. They are telling us thank you for the support that the U.S. has given to Ukraine. Captain Mikolai Saraga, it was a really interesting conversation. He was very successful in his own right. He was kind of a star in Ukraine and ended up enlisting in the military there and serving his 2-year stint as a sniper. He talked about that experience and what it meant to him and what it means to him to be part of this Cultural Forces band that's touring through the United States as a way to say thank you to the U.S. for their support and their continued support, and to gain a better understanding, as he put it. And I thought this was really interesting, to sit at the kitchen table with Americans and listen to what they're saying and what their thoughts are about the situation in Ukraine, and to gain a better understanding of the thought process of this country, not from the media, not from Hollywood, and not from inside the Beltway, which I kind of thought that was a unique approach, a different approach for sure. So when we come back after the top of the hour news break, I promised you the other day that we were going to start talking, that we've actually been talking about issues. about policies, about programs that are in place. So the first topic that we're going to have at 1210, we're going to visit with Andrew Gillen. He is a research fellow at the Cato Institute Center for Educational Freedom. And we'll talk about the state of student loan forgiveness, you know, about where we are and what's actually going on and what policies have actually made its way through to fruition or actually in place. And were those Biden policies, were those policies from other administrations that they've just expanded or otherwise? And who's paying the bill? You know, every time you give something away, somebody's paying somebody somewhere, somehow. And then in the back half of the hour, we're going to visit with Dr. Peter Earle. He is a senior economist at the American Institute for Economic Research. We've heard a little, not a lot, about the Affordable Care Act. Where does it stand today? Did it meet its goals that were promised back in 2010? And when we compare what was promised in the lead up to the passage of the ACA and what is actually in place today, what does that look like? And is insurance cheaper as a result thereof? And are more people medically insured as a result thereof? We'll talk about that as well. So stay with us. We will be right back after the top of the hour news break. This is Newell on WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.